and they try to orchestrate this thing called the TechNet. By now you know what the TechNet does. I won't bother going through that, the usual introduction. Do we have any check-ins tonight? With questions or comments, please give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which confirms that you do have a question or a comment. We've already got into XJN.
Yes.
Who else would like to check in? Give me your call letters and name and that yes at this
time. Zero. Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo, Gabe, yes.
Okay, Gabe recognized. Alpha Mike Romeo 2. No, wait a minute. Kilo Bravo 2, Alpha Mike Romeo. Do I have your call letters correct, Gabe?
Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo, Gabe, yes.
Okay, Mike Alpha Romeo. I added Alpha Mike Romeo. All right, we got Gabe. We got the XJN. Anyone else check in? Give me your call letters, name, and the word yes if you got a question or a comment.
Whiskey 2, Sugar Charlie Whiskey. We'll just be listening. The name is Jerry.
Okay, Jerry with a no. Anyone else?
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
Steve with a no. He checks in very often, but doesn't have any questions. I'm amazed. You gotta have some questions, Steve. Anyone else to check in with questions or comment? Give me your call letters and name and that word yes at this time.
WS2N. Paul with a wise telescope update.
Yeah, we haven't had a space report from you for a while, Paul. I know that NASA's doing some good things, and I like to hear about telescopes, and it's too bad we don't have clear enough weather tonight. The meteor shower is supposed to be quite observable tonight, and astronomy is one of the things I'm greatly interested in. Okay, one last call. Anyone else to check in? If you've got a question or a comment, give me a call letters and name at this time.
Good evening, all. KEY.
Very fine. Very fine, Mel. And is Julie on station also? Mel, go ahead.
Well, I don't know if she's home tonight. Yeah, she puts her scanner on. She says, I don't know what I'm listening to, but she enjoys the TechNet, especially when we talk about something about space travel. So anyhow, you know, something did come up this week. Did you have to hear that interview they did about the study on cell phone and cancer? Over.
Okay, when you say that study or the study, there's been a zillion of them, Mel, and I'm giving people lots of warning that you haven't heard the end of this yet. I could tell two things that were going on. Number one, two issues ago of the IEEE Antennas and Propagation magazine, not the proceedings, but the magazine, described an incident going on in France where certain significant law courts are ordering certain cell sites to be removed from residential areas. Well, the residential area is going to have good coverage on their cell sites, and the Europeans are ahead of us in one particular concept. A significant number of the Europeans, way back when, even before we got the idea, so to speak, were abandoning their wired telephone and using nothing but the cell phone. And all of us, and to have good coverage in a residential area, you can have cell sites in a residential area, and they're ordering cell sites to be removed. And one particular cell site they wanted to be removed because the residents of a local apartment building were suffering all kinds of medical problems, and putting tinfoil in the windows to protect themselves and doing all kinds of things. And the court said, you must remove that cell site, to which the contractor said, what in the world is going on? We hadn't even installed the antennas. It wasn't operational. How in the world could these people be getting all these medical problems? So it comes in waves. There was an article at a major website in the United States which lists the 100 approximately models of popular cell phone available to you in the United States and lists the specific absorption rate of radio frequency biohazard coming out of each one and lists them in the order of the highest ones down to the lowest ones. And the implication was if you buy one of the lowest ones, you're getting the least amount of radiation in your head and therefore it's the safest. Well, those are the ones that run the lowest power. They're going to have the lowest range. So you can't have it both ways. There's no There's no magic way. There's, let me drop. There is a company, I can't think of the name of the darn company, that came out in the last week or two advertising a very expensive device, this little piece of tinfoil-like thing that you slap up against your cell phone, and it's going to drastically protect you, the human being. It's going to stop all the radiation coming from the cell phone going into your head and emphasize all the radiation going in the other direction. It's creating an antenna pattern. It's creating a high directivity antenna pattern with no connection to the antenna and no significant physical size in wavelength to do that. And the articles are very carefully written. They tell you you're getting all these benefits, but nothing they tell you is quantitative. You put a piece of tinfoil on the inside of your cell phone, and you're going to make a 0.1 or a 0.05 decibel improvement in how much signal goes in one direction versus the other direction. At the same time, you're going to slightly detune the antenna that's there and give some grief to the electronics. It's 0.05 dB, which means, 98% of the power that was going toward you still does, and 2% doesn't. Is that worth all this extra money, and is that really significant? And is it cost-effective? I highly doubt it. I mean, the laws of physics in that smaller size won't allow you to create an antenna pattern that's anything like the Yagi patterns we all know about. So there's a lot of screaming and hollering and false claims and whatever going on. And the word radiation, we're going to be hearing it coming up over and over again. And there's another set of reports coming out saying that if you use your cordless phone or your wireless phone for more than 10 years, that they think they can measure an increase in the number of brain cancers you get. And boy, that's very difficult to document. Over a 10-year period, one group of citizens versus another group of citizens live an entirely different lifestyle. They expose themselves to different chemicals, they eat different foods, they live in different areas, and if you're going to say the cell phone is making the difference, and we're talking about, three people per 100,000 versus four people per 100,000, I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but the differences are like that, and you're going to say, well, that's a 25% increase. 25% increase of something that's very small, of mysterious origin, and you think it's because of cell phones. As you can tell, I'm very skeptical. So, I'd like to hear about it. There's more coming. Okay, I think the first person who signed in was N2XJN, and he's a carryover from last week. And Mr. XJN, we're going to discuss anything except D-Star. What would you like to talk about? That was a joke. N2XJN, you've got it. K2RAW.
K2RAW, November 2, X-ray, Juliet, November. Actually, I have a question, I have a suggestion, and I have a comment. Let me start from suggestion. I suggest for the TechNet to have something like, what do we know about? And that actually come from the last week when you again come back to the car situation and all the imposed factors in this matter, and you educate us very much in what kind of danger do we face. I'm not going to talk about it right now, but if you actually point that out, okay, what do we know about it? Let's see. What do we know about telephone systems? Somebody say, I don't need that. Well, there are many things that you may not need, but it's good to have an idea. How this thing works, how it's connected, how actually you can do it if you need one. Some people, they have houses and they have 2-3 levels. They actually have a problem because of all of these cell phones, and when we're talking about bio, not the cell phone, it's cordless phones, and when we're talking about biohazard, it's a 2.4 gigahertz sort of the frequency. So the telephone system is not only private, you cannot tune any scanner into that, and it's something that will give you intercoms built in, you can open the door from that, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not a telephone system. What do we know about closed circuit TV? Well, many people are afraid. Let me drop for a moment. Many people are afraid. I have a neighbor next to me, and he approached me, he just bought a new car, And the old car was actually damaged by the group of youngsters fighting. So nobody does it for purpose, but it was damaged. Well, so again, how to do it? How to save the money? How to do the best one for the minimum money spent? One of the examples is my camera system, that if you want to install it, some big companies will probably give you $33,000 estimate. You can do it for 10 times less, or even more. Anyhow, what do we know? Let's say there was a good question in the similar TechNet that was actually carried on in New Jersey. And the question was, what Oscar represent? The word Oscar, what does it represent? Say this in wording. And nobody knows about it. There was one person who actually was able to kind of answer the question. So, short things, very easy made. If somebody thinks that he has a knowledge about it, he prefers something that does not exceed, let's say, 5 minutes or something, and give all of the information. That would be the question if somebody wants to answer the question. This way we don't get people bored. So that's my suggestion. Now, as far as the comment and question, I held on into it because I was occupying frequency too long, thanks to you, and back to you, and to exist.
Okay. Diplomatically, one of the things that Wesley is saying, T2RIW is a long-winded guy. He's right. And as I've said a number of times before, quite often when people sign in, I ask them if they want the quick answer or the short answer, and they say, please give everyone the brief answer until you get to me. I want the full story. One other thing now, with reference to automobiles, I've been writing that subject now for about 2 weeks. The Toyota, Prius, and Lexus automobiles, the runaway stuck throttle problem. And there are a number of people who think that that's automotive and not really ham radio, and they wonder, is it appropriate? Well, we're all listening to a 2-meter FM repeater. The major reason it exists is so that people from their automobile, ham radio operators, will have a greater range, because the automobile antenna is low in gain and low in altitude, and when you talk to a repeater, you've got great range while you're mobiling. So I envision a ham radio operator in his automobile using his ham radio. He's got his mic in his right hand, and he's allowed to do that because it's a simplex system. He talks for a while and then listens for a while and doesn't do both at once. Doesn't get quite the same opportunity to get excited. I mean, on a couple of occasions, I've driven on the expressway alongside of somebody using their cell phone, and they're obviously having a heated discussion because they're waving their hands in the air while driving and shouting. And I can tell that person's not really paying attention to where he's driving. Well, I worry about the fact that a ham radio operator, who's very highly occupied as far as the driving priority is concerned, and a little bit of his attention is directed to the ham radio, and if all of a sudden the automobile decides to go into the wide-open throttle mode of his engine, he's in an awful lot of risk. So ham radio-wise, I think it's a somewhat appropriate subject. I don't think the news media have given us enough information as to how to protect ourselves. And we had a significant number of discussions back and forth about the European concept versus the American concept of downshifting automobiles and so on. We slowly came to the conclusion, this particular group, I think we came to the conclusion that the best solution we know of is that when that engine runs away, get the darn car into the neutral shift position. And you are allowed to put the car in neutral with an automatic or with a stick shift. In the case of a stick shift, you've got to do it by pushing in the clutch. But essentially every automatic transmission automobile, you can put it into neutral and that will save your life. Downshifting, you can't go there. And I read a report this week about a man whose car, at first the brakes had enough capability with the wide open engine to slow down the car. But then the computer in the car sensed the fact that it was moving more slowly, and it downshifted automatically. It thought it was climbing a hill.
and as such, with the downshifting, it had more clutch and had more torque to the wheels, which override the brakes even more, and it started going back up in speed again. So whether you go into downshift because you did it, or whether it does it automatically, in either case, I'm convinced that is not a solution. You got to get it into neutral, and if that doesn't work, you gently turn off the key, and don't get it into the steering wheel lock position. That, to me, is a very important subject because it's life and death, and 4 million automobiles are going to be recalled in the next 6 months, and hopefully a much better solution is going to be found. And it's not just the floor mat. There's a lot more going on with this fly-by-wire system. That's an extremely important subject. Let me drop.
Reflector 9126, link clear.
Okay, it looks like we lost the eastern link because I talked too long and timed it out. Oh well. The other subject that we discuss reasonably frequently, because it's a very emotional subject, on the TechNet has come up 10 or 15 times, at least over the last, pick a number, 10 or 15 years. A couple of times per year, the radio frequency biohazard problem comes up. The fact that radio signals are called RF radiation, and people make the misassociation of RF radiation and nuclear radiation. They're night and day different. One is called ionizing, that's nuclear, and one is called non-ionizing, that's RF. And yes, the word radiation means spread out. It has an effect that spreads out in all directions. That's what radiation means. The average person thinks the word radiation means nuclear and cellular damage and disruption of body functions and so on, and brain cancers and tumors and cataracts of the eyes and sterilization, all kinds of things they worry about, and headaches and nausea, and it just goes on and on and on. A cell phone is an extremely low-powered device, and you are at a slight increased risk if you are living very far from a cell site, where the cell phone, in order to have proper coverage, has to go to maximum power output. And believe it or not, the greatest risk you have from the cell phone when it's running at high power is because the electronics get physically warm to the touch, and you're holding this warm object against your body. The warmth that comes from the physical touch and the thermal effects of the cell phone probably is considerably more damaging than the RF energy that comes out of it. So the fact that it gets hot to the touch, if you're an extremely heavy user at a long distance from a cell site, that might very well be the greatest risk it has. Maybe we should put a piece of thermal insulation between us and the cell phone. That would probably make a hell of a lot more sense as far as human safety is concerned, as opposed to these so-called antenna pattern changing devices that are about to be sold. I think that's what you're saying, that we should sum up these subjects and come to the right conclusion, the best compendium of this group as to what we think is the right solution. I think that's what you're suggesting, Wesley, but maybe I've misinterpreted you, and I'm going to turn it back to you. In 2XJN, K2LIW in the TechNet. Wait for the beep.
November 2X3, 2X November. Well, it is slightly different because of my inability to express myself properly in English. What I was suggesting is the 5 minutes short prepared text or whatever, the information about a certain subject. What do we know about it? What is OSCAR? How it works? When it was launched? How it served the purpose? And what we do have from that? Or the space travel? Okay, basic information. What do we know about it? What is the purpose? What it serves? What is the achievement? Now, if there are no further questions, is that the subject is not really very much interesting. These 5 minutes actually gives you the indication which way to go with the TechNet. If there are many questions, or it's very interesting, like the things that you did in the past, then people are going to just occupy the subject. But then, if you have any more things to cover, then you say, hey, guys, this is how much time do we have for that. And I believe certain things are important. It's very much educational what you're doing. Okay, back to you.
Yeah,
welcome to the New England Reflector, 912.
Channel 6.
Watch it, Dick. Keep the darn thing with a beep, huh? Yes, sir, Eric. I'll try. Try to be a little bit more brief. I'll try. I usually don't succeed. And there are some nights when we get into a particularly juicy subject, so to speak, where certain people have strong opinions, feelings, and a great need for knowledge on the subject. And some of those nights, only two or three people sign in, so we don't have a great big long list. Occasionally, I've arranged in such a way that, hey, this is a long subject. We'll come back to it after we've answered everyone else's question. And we've got the dead air time, so to speak. I've occasionally done that. Maybe I've got to do that some more. By the way, Oscar, O-S-C-A-R, not too many people know, and for Orbiting Satellite Containing Amateur Radio. There's a darn many abbreviations and acronyms that we use in the United States that quite often people completely forget about what they originally stand for. The biggest example is RADAR, R-A-D-A-R. For 35 years, I worked for a company that for 50 solid years, Airborne Instruments Laboratory, every single product they made, with rare exception, had something to do with radar. And one day I ran an experiment. I went to 15 engineers in a row in that company and asked them, what does radar stand for? I told them, it's an extremely important subject. It has put bread on your table for the last 10 years. You really want to know what it is. Tell me what it stands for. And I got an expression on people's face that was like a deer in the headlights. And I got five engineers deep into the radar department before I got an answer. And radar stands for radio detecting and ranging. So some of these acronyms, it's amazing the way we lose sight of them. Wesley, don't worry about the fact that you have some difficulty expressing yourself. After you and I go back and forth two or three times, we eventually figure out what each one is saying. It's worked very well. It's just a little bit slow. A person who listens to us sometimes dwelling too long on a subject, yes, they're going to get annoyed. Some of that annoyance is, let me drop.
It means well, I why.
Joe recognized, and you're on the list, the V2RYY is on the list. Some of it, without a doubt, is because I'm too long-winded. Some of it is because it is a subject they're not interested in. They want to be in other subjects. Some of their anger is because they don't have enough control of the situation. We would all like to have control of everything. I'd like to control my children, my car, the crabgrass, my boss, the company I work for. I'd like to control all those things. And you can sit in front of a psychologist for a few years and you'll eventually find out you're not going to get control of any of it. Take it or leave it. That's living. For the most part, very little of your life are you going to have complete control. You're going to have a tiny little bit of control of some of it, and you've got to learn to live with that. And that's a philosophy I'm giving you, but I think it's a partial truth. The way we sum things up, is there a way that we can take all of our conclusions and put them all in one spot so that people can review them? To some degree, Mike, the guy who runs the website where all of this gets recorded, he does take particular subjects, like, for instance, the canned program of instruction that Mel has given us on how do decibels work and how does a Smith chart work and how do antennas work and so on. There are separate packages that have been set aside. When you go to that website, you can go to that package and listen to that audio live, so to speak. It's all recorded. So to some degree, the summations and the conclusions and the instruction sets that sort of come out of this TechNet are being assembled on that website. And yes, there's ways of making it better, but it's a darn good beginning, as I see it, Wesley. Let me go to the next person, which is going to be Gabe, and after that, Joe. And then we're going to come back to you, Wesley, and dig deeper into what I think you're saying. And by some magic, we're also going to squeeze into what Mel was saying. But I think Mel's got a point of order here. Let me give you a little bit of time here, Mel, to give us a couple of more words on what you're starting to say with reference to cell phone danger and people's perception and the latest articles. You know, give us a little bit of a thumbnail, and we're going to come back to that one because it's a subject that's on a lot of people's mind. Is radio dangerous? Is it affecting my health? Because I'm a ham radio operator, 10 years from now, am I going to get some kind of a health effect that I should know about upstream so I can start protecting myself? K2KEY, wait for the beep, K2RIW.
Comments on the East End link.
Okay, K2KEY. All right, now, this supposedly is a new study out of the UK. It was on this focus. They comes on with this Indian girl, Dolly Y, the Dashi Dolly Y comes on around, I guess it's around 12:30 at night. Just so happens, that's why I was sitting in the lunch. She called me over and she said, hey, they're talking about an interview of a group of so-called doctors and PhD physicists in the UK, and they said that the conclusion is that they have no conclusion, definitely, you know, one way or the other. However, as the spokesman for the group said, that you actually are rolling the roulette wheel as to whether or not you will become some way physically sick from the use of cell phones. There is no 100% yes conviction either way. But he says, in other words, he left you with a lot of doubt. He says that you're rolling, in other words, rolling the dice or rolling the roulette wheel that have been laying on your number because of use of the cell phone era. In other words, he was basically, they were saying certain people are more susceptible to possibly getting some kind of condition like brain cancer because they emphasize that people they noticed that had brain cancer, they literally were able to evaluate which way they held the cell phone and which side of the brain it was on and the whole. In other words, they sort of left a lot of people scared sick over.
I don't know what's doing that, Chuck, but it must be on that end.
Okay. Is there someone from out of the area who wants to sign into the technical net? Give me your call letters right now. I'm K2RIW. Maybe the answer is no. When it comes to rolling the roulette wheel, when you wake up in the morning and get out of bed, you're rolling a roulette wheel. There's risk in everything we do. If you stay in bed, there's risk. If you get out of bed, there's risk. You get into your automobile, you're taking a considerable risk. Everything has risk. You have to accept that you're not going to get out of this one alive, meaning life. You're going to try to make the best you can out of it, but you're not going to get out of it alive. You've got to accept that. There's risk in everything you do. The best we can do is educate ourselves as to what are the individual risk factors. Do whatever you can to minimize those risk factors and their impact on you. And then you proceed with the activity. That's the only choice you've got. I do a very dangerous thing. I climb a 100-foot high radio tower as a senior citizen, and I worked on my antennas. There's a tremendous amount of risk there. Gravity can really get you down. And I've done what I can to minimize that risk by using mountaineering equipment and fancy safety harnesses and whatever. I carefully plan the operation with all kinds of backup. I've been doing that serious tower work on 100-foot high towers of mine. Every piece of steel is there, every antenna is there. I put it there. And I've been doing that on multiple towers since, my first tower, I think, was 1967. So I've been doing it for like 40 some odd years. And I've survived it, so to some degree, I've done something right. To me, I get a lot of pleasure out of what that radio tower can do, but I accept a tremendous amount of risk by doing it. And I've done what I can to minimize the risk. That's about the only choice you've got, education and minimization. Let me drop.
NY2H. K2GJE.
Okay, let's pick up these two people and find out, are they signing into the net, or are they making a comment on the subnet, and we'll add you to the list. NY2H was the first one, K2GJE was second. NY2H, start up with your name, sir, and tell us, why you gave us your call letters.
Okay, Dick, name is Lou. Reporting on the Eastern Link. The Eastern Link, as of about 8:10, has lost all audio. It is up and it's constant carrier, and it connects and disconnected that time, one time to the New England reflector, but the audio is complete. So when you crank it up.
Yeah, very fine, Lou. I just tuned to the Eastern Link, and you're right. I'm not hearing anything there. It could be because I timed it out, but maybe Eric needs to know that the audio is not coming through. KE2EJ, if you're available, Eric. K2RIW.
K2GJE.
Okay, Eric is the man who controls that, and so when we get his attention, we'll find out if he can make a correction. K2GJE, start with your name, sir, and then your comment.
You call me?
Yeah, we just had a report that there is connection between the Western Link and the Eastern Link, but the audio is not coming through, and Lou NY2H just brought that to our attention. Back to you, Eric.
Yeah, I'm fully aware, and actually it looks like the computer hung up out there, so somebody's going to have to go kick it. Otherwise, the thing, it's just putting out a carrier, so it's not a connection, it's just, as they say in computer land, it's just stupid.
Okay, Eric, as you know, is our technical maven. He and Andy of the H2CDL maintain all this elaborate equipment owned by Limark. And let me ask you what you might be able to tell us, Eric, and that is when we make sure we wait for the beep to make sure we don't time out the link between the Western and the Eastern repeater, that allows the audio under normal circumstances to get out there. Do you believe people who want to sign in through the Echo Link capability, is that also disabled? Or is it just the audio from the 8.5 machine not getting to the 3.75 machine? KE2EJ, KQRIW.
Yeah, KQRIW, KE2EJ. Yeah, the Echo Link is not functional now because it relies on the Selden machine. The Selden machine has a problem. Okay, by the way, the folks in Las Vegas, there's somebody in Bayshore that's listening to us, and also South Hill, Virginia. That's currently who's connected up and has joined us at this point. So, I may actually, looks like the Virginia station dropped out again. I'm actually going to link up my repeater, which is in Plainview, so I can, as I head out that way, I can keep tabs on things. But otherwise, the way the logic is in the repeater in Selden, it's going to be putting out a carrier from now till we do something about it. So it's going to have to get taken care of. K2RIW, K2J.
Very fine, Eric. I can well understand that we're somewhat limited in resources now to correct the problem immediately. Do you believe the people who have signed in through Echo Link, are they hearing what we're saying on the 8.5 machine? Or they're just not able to get back to us because it right now is linked through 375, the Selden machine. And so I guess I'd like to know, are they hearing us, or are they just hearing a blank carrier, so to speak? Back to you, Eric.
Right now they're hearing nothing, and they will continue to hear nothing until we get something done about this.
Very fine, Eric. Good luck with all those repairs. I know you get your hands full because Eric is, he works at these hours. I think he's at his point of occupation. At the same time, he's trying to maintain all his machines. So don't lean on him, you guys. Go easy with him. K2GJE. Start up your name, sir, and your comment. K2RIW. My name is Dick.
This is Ed out here. Just wanted to probably repeat what you've already heard. Your 375 repeater is putting out a constant carrier out here, a good 30 dB over with no audio. And I was trying to make you aware of it, but some of the other people let you know before me. The carrier doesn't turn itself off. It's just constant over.
Very fine, Ed. Looks like now we've had at least two reports, and we now know the machine is stuck. Its computer is in a hang-up mode. Repair is on the way, just there's no guarantee. So when it's going to take place. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. The next person who signed in with a question or comment tonight was Gabe.
Great.
I hope Gabe has been able to hang in there all this time. KB2MAR. K2RIW. You got it, Gabe.
K2RIW. KB2MAR. First of all, high copy from this position. Back to you.
Copy is amazingly good. Please proceed. I didn't wait for the beep, but you should, Gabe. Go ahead.
QSL. Basically, I have a question regarding a tabletop tape player recorder. It's a European version, and it runs on 220. Now, the internal electronics doesn't allow it to switch automatically back to 110. It's strictly 220 unit. The only way you can make it work the easy way is to purchase a separate voltage converter type transformer. You know, the ones that go from 220 to 110 and vice versa. Now, instead of always plugging that big bulky transformer along everywhere I go, is there a way that I can rewind the internal transformer of the unit and basically change the turns ratio so that it'll accept 110 and, well, basically, it'll take 110 and it'll bring the voltage to the amount to charge the internal battery and also the power of the unit. I was thinking maybe, is it possible probably to, when the voltage is decreased, don't touch the primary. And in the secondary, you double the turns ratio. KB2MAR, KHRW, KB2MAR.
Yeah, darn interesting question, Gabe. Way back in the dark ages of 1960, roughly, I was building a transistorized transmitter. You couldn't go into Radio Shack. Radio Shack didn't exist. You couldn't go into Lafayette Radio, where we used to buy our parts, or into Arrow Electronics. And you couldn't buy a transformer that would give you convenient voltages for running transistorized circuits, like 12 volts and 15 volts and so on. That kind of a transformer, secondary voltage, didn't exist. And I had to wind my own. And I had to, what I did was to take a so-called audio output transformer from a tube-type radio, and the primary is close enough to the right number of turns to work on 110 volts AC, 60 cycles, and I just changed the turns ratio on the secondary. Now, the problem I ran into is that when you try to double the number of turns on the secondary, if the manufacturer of the transformer has done a good job, he has used up the whole window that's in there. He's used the largest gauge of wire that will allow him to put in the number of turns, so he gets the minimum amount of resistance on the primary and secondary winding. So to double the number of turns on your secondary, there's a 50-50 chance you haven't got the room to do it. Therefore, you might be forced into, by one technique or another, lowering the number of turns in the primary to make the transformer work correctly that's already inside the tape recorder. Have a job? Another solution is that you've already talked about using a step-up transformer that you use on the outside, and the ones that are available to you are bulky. Your tape recorder probably only needs a couple of watts. Therefore, a much, much smaller transformer would be possible. In my opinion, something a little bit bigger than a healthy-sized wall wart should be able to give you enough volume for a transformer that does the step-up for you. But before you go through all that rigmarole, do a little bit more research, in my opinion. That European tape recorder is made to run on 220 volts or 240 volts AC at 50 hertz. The slim possibility the tape recorder does some critical timing with the 50 hertz versus the 60 hertz in order to make the capstan run at the right speed. Some tape recorders do that. Other tape recorders have their own internal reference voltage, and the capstan transformer is running on DC, and it's a servo mechanism, where the servo mechanism determines the right speed and revolutions per minute of that capstan that's making the tape move through the machine. And therefore, it doesn't care. As long as the power supply is working correctly, would a simple rectifier network that was designed for working on 50 hertz work on 60 hertz? Yeah, it should work like a charm. Just as long as so do a little bit of checking to make sure that the tape recorder is not really using the 50 hertz versus 60 hertz. And correcting the voltage, you've got the right concepts. There's now at least two ways of doing it. Changing turns ratio on the transformer, buying a new transformer with the right turns ratio, installing it, or using a properly sized external transformer. It doesn't have to be so big. Consider one other thing, though, Gabe. This is the day of solid-state, beautiful, high-density memory system. There are tape recorder-like things that you can buy these days that are extremely tiny, that have a solid-state memory. It has all the characteristics of a tape recorder, but there's no longer any tape inside. And some of these, I'm going to call it a sound camera. Some of these sound cameras you can buy are not very expensive. They're very compact. And before you go through all this effort, you want to at least do a little bit of research to find out, is that the product for you? Now, if I was in your shoes, I would do exactly what you... If I was in your shoes, let me drop.
Thank you. Help him, Dick.
Very fine. I'm going to go to you in a second. If I was in your shoes, because of my pride and my ability to fix chunks of electronics, and because I just like getting into the experiment of it all, I would do what you're doing. Either finding a way of getting the right transformer, changing turns ratio, using an external device. But now we're going to get the real answer. Go ahead, Eric. I mean, Mel, K2KEY, what would you do if you were in Gabe's position, K2RIW?
Okay, this is K2KEY. Look carefully. A lot of the foreign, and I've worked on a number of them, especially German radio equipment, a lot of them that were wired for 220 also can be rewired for 110. They have on the transformer, they have a center tap on the primary. You'll see three wires on the primary. And what it is one is a center tap so that you can just change it around and then wire it for 110 by then paralleling up the two outer wires and using the center tap. I have seen that a number of times on those foreign piece of equipment. In other words, they made provisions that it could be switched around. Especially, I could say, the telltale is you'll see three wires on the primary of the transformer that go.
Comment.
Yeah, I'm going to make a comment on that one first, then I'm going to pass it over to Wesley. What you said is only partially accurate on that one, Phil. If you've got a pure center tap and only three wires on the primary, and if you use outer two wires, which are made for 230 volts, I'm going to call it, everything's hunky-dory. If you want to feed a three-wire transformer primary with 110, you've got to use one end and center tap only. If you connect the two outer wires together to the center tap, you're now using the primary two-halves out of phase, and you're going to get smoke and flames. If you truly have a transformer which is properly made where you can just use half of the primary, one end and center tap, and feed it 110, you're hunky-dory. If it is a four-wire type primary, then you wire it together so that the two of the wires become a center tap, but you don't connect to anything, and use two outer ones, and it runs on 230. When you want to run that one on 115, you have to take all four wires and put them together in a combination of beginning of one connected to the beginning of the second. That's one wire that goes to the 110 volt line, and the ending of the first goes to the ending of the second. You got to make sure that those two halves of the primary, if you're using both halves, are in phase with each other. And the quickest way to find out in phase is to just feed one of them and measure the phase of what's coming out of the other, and you'll eventually get it right. Usually by way of the color code, they help you. In other words, the two beginnings will be black and black and stripe, and the two ends will be green and green stripe, if you know what I mean. So the color coding will give you some hinting as to which go together. But to really use a primary, all of it in the lower, in the highest efficiency mode, there's got to be four wires in the primary, in my opinion. Let's see what Wesley's going to say about all this, because he's worked with European equipment. He spent a good function of his life in Europe. N2XJM, K2RIW.
Okay, N2XJM. I was listening for the beep. I didn't hear the beep. Hold on. Okay, N2XJM. You get to look at the frequency drives. Then you're going to find something like a steady factor. The difference between 50 and 60 hertz for any given transformer will give you a 17% of increase of the voltage. Now somebody can have a use from that factor and turn in.
With some transformers, I think I agree with you, Wesley. If you've got a well-designed transformer where each half of the primary is made for 115 volts AC, and then you've got two halves of a primary, and you put them in series and it runs at 230 volts, in theory, a well-designed transformer, the secondary, will always give you the same voltage. Yes, if you've got a poorly designed transformer, which has a lot of leakage reactance between primary and secondary, then when you slide from 50 hertz to 60 hertz, the leakage factor will probably go down, and you'll get a little bit more voltage output. I agree with you. The good news is that Gabe is going in the right direction as far as frequency is concerned. You take almost any reasonably well-designed transformer made for a 50 hertz power, and you feed it 60 hertz. In general, the transformer is happier. It has less saturation characteristics and a little bit better coupling, and you might get a little bit more voltage output. Where people really run into a problem, and I was there because I was working for the division of the factory that made spectrum analyzers, and this thing was using 350 watts of power, and we had a 60-cycle transformer in there with 115 and 230 volt windings on the primary, and you could wire it for whatever voltage you want. That's the good news. But we shipped those to Europe or to Japan, the portions of Japan that were running on 50 hertz. The transformer design was not quite as good as the vendor told us. He told us he's giving us the transformer good for 50 hertz. Well, he was fibbing. The transformer at 50 hertz was saturating like crazy, making loud humming sounds and running hot and not giving quite the right power output voltage. And the poor spectrum analyzer was running on low voltage out of its power supply. And therefore the screen did some funny things and it didn't work quite right. So when you go from a 60 cycle world to a 50 hertz world, transformers can experience a lot of grief. On top of that, you'd be amazed how many women in the United States have taken their hair dryer made for 115, and by some magic they plugged it into a 230 volt circuit in Europe, and they got the hair dryer to run beautifully for 10 seconds, super fast, super hot, and then it burned itself up. Gotta get the voltage right. So I think you know a little bit more, Gabe. We haven't given you an exact answer, but we've told you a little bit more of what's involved. Let me turn it back to you, see if it all makes sense. KD2MAP, MAR, sorry about that, K2LIW. You got it, Gabe. Wait for the beep.
KD2LIW, KD2MAR. QS Sal, I got all the information. I just hope that the easy way to do it, like how you described, that the primary has three taps, just use one of the two. Either use the center or upper or the center of the bottom one. I just hope it's that easy. If it only has, two taps, the only way to do it is to rewind the primary. Now, what you would do probably is just reduce the windings by 50% and hope it's as simple as that. And, what else? Well, that's basically it. I mean, if it's as easy as that, I'd rather do that than lug a 5-pound transformer around all the time. You know what I'm saying? By the way, I understand about the digital stuff and all that. The reason why I have this is if we're playing books on tape. It has those 4-track tapes. The books are on those type of tapes. That's the reason why. HRW, KB2MAR.
WS2N, question.
Okay, we'll get to Paul's question in a second. You got the right idea, Gabe. Now I see what you're doing. You want to take pre-recorded tapes of a particular style that your machine is compatible with, and you want to be able to play them. On top of that, my pride in electronics, I would do the same thing you're doing. I would be fixing it. So if you're not able to find the right size, wall-wart-sized transformer that converts 110 to 230, that's the simple solution. Really feed your machine 230. Then you're going to have to change the transformer that's in there. You're going to be unhappy about the fact you're going to find out that the primary is the bottom winding. The secondary is usually the top winding. For you to change the number of turns in the primary, if you don't already have that center tap, you've got to remove the secondary winding to get down to the primary winding to change the turns. That's going to be a pain. It's doable. Just to know ahead of time that the amount of grief is going to be greater than you think, assuming that that transformer is not potted and you can really take it apart. Second of all, let's hope that the winding size they used on the primary was oversized for the requirement. Because when you use the full primary with all the turns made for 230, there's a certain current going through that primary. When you feed it 115 instead of 230, and you only feed half the winding, half the number of turns, those turns will be running at twice the current. So if they were a little bit marginal in the design of the gauge of the wire on that primary, and now you're feeding half voltage at twice current into half of the primary, it's going to run hotter. If this is the best of all worlds, you're going to take the cold transformer apart, count the number of turns everywhere, remove the winding on the primary, and you're going to wind your new primary and approximately double the cross-sectional area of the wire you put in there, because you're going to put in half the number of turns, but the wire you put in there is going to conduct twice as much current as it is right now when you run on half voltage, because the output power is going to be the same, and by conservation of energy, you've got to put that same power into the primary. To put the same power in at half the voltage, you've got to double the current. Otherwise, you're violating the laws of physics. So life's a little bit more complicated than you'd like it to be. Now, it may not be that bad, but if I was you, I would give a good hard look at the transformer and see how easy it is to take apart. If it's really potted and made the way many of them are in miniature equipment, taking it apart may be watchmaker work, and there could be a considerable amount of difficulty there. Go slow on that step. Do a lot of investigation first. Does somebody else make a transformer that gives you the right voltages, and can you do a substitution of transformer rather than rework? There's nothing magic about the particular piece of iron that's on that transformer right now. If somebody else makes a transformer that you can squeeze in and has the right voltages, primary and secondary, that's another approach. Let's see what Paul's got to say. WS2N, go ahead with your question. And while you've got the mic, also tell us, would you like some time to give us the update on the space report? WS2N, and waiting for the beep, K2LIW.
Okay, very good. Yeah, we'll do the space report. I was thinking, you know, I mean, Gabe has got a piece of equipment that's meant to operate in Europe, and we have plenty of pieces of equipment here that, you know, people bring over, like you said, hair dryers. You can go to Radio Shack or a lot of places and get those transformers to bring with you to Europe, and your equipment will work fine over there. Maybe even change the, you know, from the 60 hertz to 50 hertz. Maybe it does that. You might know about that, Dick. But they've got to have a situation where there's an equivalent Radio Shack or something in Europe where they sell a transformer to the Europeans before they come. I mean, they got to bring their hair dryers over here too, Dick. What do you think, that you can get on the internet and probably send away for this from some company, if not in the United States, someplace in Europe, and have them send a transformer plug right into a wall or something? Dick. Back to you.
Comment.
Wesley recognized. Get to you in a second, Wesley. You just brought something to my attention, Paul. Radio Shack, at least when I made a trip over to London a few years ago, Radio Shack, I'm waiting for the advertisement to go away, Radio Shack sold a very nice compact device that was about, a 2-inch cube, 2.5-inch cube, which would take the 230 volts for Europe, and with silicon-controlled rectifiers and careful timing, it would bring the RMS voltage down to 115 to run your American equipment in Europe. So to cut voltage down by way of careful timing of silicon control rectifier circuits and a little bit of transformer action in there, that's easy. To step it back up, a little bit more difficult. Does somebody in the United States make a simple device that will take European equipment from an American power supply and give it the right voltages? That's a bit more difficult. There is another approach. That transformer right now, because you're feeding it half the primary voltage, assuming you don't have a center tap on it, and assuming you don't want to take it apart and do rewinding, That transformer is working beautifully on 60 hertz. It's happy as all hell. Just that the secondary winding is not giving you enough voltage so that when it's rectified, the power supply is not happy. The other approach worth considering is rewire the diode network of the secondary winding, the way it goes into the filter capacitor, and make it a voltage doubler circuit. There's two or three different ways you can make voltage doublers. Some of them require a centipath on the secondary. Some of them do not. I can't think of the name of the technique that's used on the Cockcroft-Walton high voltage generator for particle accelerators. But there's a kind of circuit that exists that with just two wires coming out of the secondary winding, you can do a voltage doubling. As I said, the circuit has got a man's name, Baxter circuit or something like that. So you could use voltage doubling on the current transformer so that the filter input of your power supply is happy, it's getting the right voltage, and the rest of the circuit works. Again, based on the assumption that your tape recorder is not using the 50 hertz as part of its critical timing to make the tape run at the right speed. So that's another approach. I give you a 50-50 chance that with a little bit of research you can make that one fly. And to put in a voltage doubler circuit with the right size diodes and capacitors, that can be done very compactly. It's not going to change the size of your tape recorder. Wesley, N2XJN, go right ahead with your comment. K2RIW, wait for the beep.
Can I get in here for a minute,
sir?
I got the solution for this problem.
Stand by, Howie. Wesley first. Go ahead, Wesley.
N2XJN. That would be also helpful if you mentioned something to the people from the general theory and practice for connecting transformers in serial and in parallel in order to change the voltage. And to explain.
Okay. Well, I think, if I understand correctly, Wesley is confirming that in order to have a transformer primary, which is really made for working on half voltage and double voltage, 230 versus 115. It's got to have four wires, not three wires, in order to make the phasing come out right. If you've got two separate windings on the primary, and you use them in series with proper phasing, it runs on 230. You use them in parallel with proper phasing, it runs on 115. When you're on the 115 parallel mode, and if you get them out of phase, you get the two wires of one winding not in the right polarity with the other two wires, the two primary windings will fight each other, and you're going to get smoke and flames real fast. You'll know right away it draws high current. When in doubt, use the technique that Mel has told us about. Make sure you've got a 110-volt light bulb, maybe a 50-watt light bulb, in series with your circuit. And if your circuit happens to be a short circuit, the light bulb will light up. Nothing bad happens. And if your circuit is drawing normal current, the light bulb will not light up. So that way you can hook it up without creating damage. Other than that, there's more elaborate techniques by which you can measure the apparent impedance of the primary at 60 hertz. Not all of us have got that capability. That's one thing that I think Wesley is bringing to our attention. You've got to worry about phasing. Even when you're in the series mode, when you're running on 230 volts, if it's got four wires. Again, if you make those two windings out of phase because you wired them the wrong way, again, the primary will be fighting itself, and you'll get smoke and flames. You got to be careful about that. Howie, go right ahead with your comment. Wait for the beep, K2RIW.
All right, Jim.
I heard what you said, and the answer to your question is negatory. You're going to have to go to that higher power mode, if you know what I mean, Howie.
On both devices.
Okay, I think Howie is he's changing his configuration. He's going to come back later with the mode, what I call his higher power mode, to get over the interference so that he can tell us his comment. So I wonder if you've heard about voltage doubler rectifier networks, Gabe. There's a whole series of those. I know that I've seen one very recently when you just Google the search word high voltage experiment, and you'll see these doubler networks that allow you to get thousands of volts. Well, you don't need thousands of volts. You don't have to build you know, 14 stages to get thousands of volts. You only build two of these stages of a voltage doubler as the rectifier on the secondary of your current transformer, of the transformer you're using right now, without modifying the transformer in any way. Now, that's another approach which I give you a high probability can make to work. I wonder if that made some sense, Gabe. KB2, MAER.